First, we have a very welcome guest from the Department of Rehabilitation. Kim Rutledge, director now of the Department of Rehabilitation, and I had the pleasure of meeting her in person, and I believe you will enjoy her just as much as I did. I've heard her speak at Joe Xavier's retirement, and so I hope you'll enjoy meeting her. And then Sue Pelbath, who is the Deputy Director of Specialized Services. And they may have a few other staff members with them. So I will turn it over to Kim.
Thank you so much, Regina, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm so happy to be here with you all today for your virtual conference here. So as Regina mentioned, I'm Kim Rutledge, and I am the new director of the Department of Rehabilitation. I've been in the role for about exactly 3 months now, and am just really excited to be in the role and have an opportunity to spend a little bit of time with you all today and tell you all a little bit about myself, as well as kind of my vision for the department and where we hope to be going in the coming months and years. I know that many of you had a long-lasting relationship with former Director Joe Xavier, and, you know, I spent a lot of time with him over the last year or so, kind of preparing to step into this role, and know how important this community is to DOR. And first of all, just want to say that I'm committed to continuing those relationships that, you know, were established and fostered so well by Director Xavier. So just to tell you all a little bit about myself, I have been with the state of California for about 9 years, the last three of which have been at DOR. Prior to coming to DOR, I spent a number of years working in other disability programs, most notably the In-Home Supportive Services Program and Adult Protective Services Program at the Department of Social Services. But part of what motivated me to want to come to DOR is I am a person with a disability. I'm a wheelchair user and was born with my disability, and have been a consumer of VR and independent living services, both off and on throughout the course of my life. And really, I see the services that we provide in this department as being critical to letting people really live their full lives. You know, I first went to VR when I was a teenager. Well, actually, it'd probably be more accurate to say they came to me. A vocational rehabilitation counselor showed up at my IEP meeting and, you know, really helped my family get connected to services so I could go to college and, you know, be able to get a college degree and pursue a career, which I proceeded to do. Then a number of years later, when I was laid off from a job and wanted to change careers, at that point I was living in California, and I went to DOR and again was able to receive services to go to graduate school, get a master's degree, and do the work that I'm doing here today. So I really firsthand experienced the transformative power of our services. And you know, I know we spend a lot of time talking about employment, but really it's about whether it's jobs or housing or assistive technology or whatever it is, everything we do is really in service of making sure that people with disabilities can live the best life that they want to, however they want to. And I am committed to making sure that that continues and that the people that come through our doors receive the best services they can to live the lives they want to lead. So with that, I'm going to, I know that Sue and her team are here and have a lot of information to share with you all today. So I'm just going to take a few minutes to first kind of go over some of the initiatives that I'm working on right now around my own vision and direction for the department. Then I'll provide a few brief updates on other things going on at DOR, and then turn it over to Sue and her team. So like I said, I wanted to start out and talk a little bit about what my goals are for the department. So right now I really have three goals, and I'm going to talk about each of them in a little bit of detail now. The first one is increasing the number of people who leave the VR program with a job that leads to a long-term career. I think that we're all pretty aware of how in recent years, the number of individuals that we're serving throughout the department in our employment program has increased pretty dramatically. And our staffing has not necessarily kept up with that growth. So we are looking at all of this to figure out the best way to be able to move forward and address that and make sure that we're getting people through services faster, getting them, you know, signed up and into case, and making sure that people are getting the attention that they need throughout their DOR case so we get to a successful outcome in the end. So which we're also having to figure this out right now with a lot of things going on, both with our state budget and everything going on federally, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more in a moment. But we are wanting to make sure that we are improving these outcomes with the existing resources that we have. So how I'm thinking about doing this right now and the work that we're starting right now to actually make this a reality is I've dedicated a small team of existing DOR leadership to lead the effort to increase employment outcomes and overall quality of services. We're considering a number of different options, including a possible reorganization plan, reviewing our counseling staff classifications to improve hiring, improving our onboarding and training processes for counselors, and a better communication plan to improve our community and business awareness and engagement. We're also looking at modernizing our service delivery by leveraging certain tools such as artificial intelligence to be able to allow our staff to work more quickly and effectively. This leads to really my second goal, which is modernizing a lot of our business operations, our data collection, our IT functions, and how we do communications as an entire department. So we're modernizing many of the internal tools that our staff uses for everything from their own requests for things they need to how we do our IT functions. Lots of those types of things are in the process of being modernized right now to be able to free up staff time to do other things. We're also looking to modernize our internal and external communications. You may be aware that we had an effort last year to change our department's name to something that would resonate a little bit more than rehabilitation. And unfortunately, those efforts are on hold due to some things going on in the legislature. However, we're looking to change our program naming conventions to better align with plain language that will better resonate with people with disabilities. So this may include renaming our vocational rehabilitation, specialized services, and independent living programs and divisions. Once our new program names are established with feedback from our staff, as well as stakeholders like you, the legislature, and other community partners, we will update all of our outreach and education materials, many of which have not been updated in over 15 years. And then my final goal really is improving collaboration between our employment services and our other programs, both internally and with other disability and aging programs statewide. So while here at DOR, most of our staffing and resources are directed to the vocational rehabilitation program, most individuals with disabilities really succeed in employment if they have access to the other services that we provide as well. And that includes a lot of the programs that we have for individuals who are blind or visually impaired. It's like our OIB program, the OCB, and then our independent living programs otherwise. Because as I like to say, you know, Having a job is great, but it's pretty hard to have a job if you don't have a roof over your head, or for many people, personal care assistance or adaptive technology or the other things that we need to do in order to be able to both work and live our lives. Additionally, many of the people who come to us need additional services that are provided either through other governmental agencies or non-governmental organizations. So we're going to really leverage our relationships and build new ones across departments and programs to ensure that everyone who comes through our doors has access to the full scope of services available to them, whether their service is necessarily at DOR or not. Because in the end, as I said, really the goal is to make sure that everyone who comes through our doors really succeeds and is able to be independent, however that looks for them. So those are really my three goals for the department and what I'm working on making sure come to reality in the coming months and years as I adjust to this new role. I'm going to move on now and talk a little bit about what is going on at a federal and state level. So that way, you know, and kind of give some context to some of these things that are going on. So first of all, I'd like to talk a little bit about the national landscape. As I'm sure many of you are aware, the president issued an executive order about a month ago now that eliminates the Department of Education federally. And the Rehabilitation Services Administration, or the RSA, and many of our other programs sit under the Federal Department of Education. So to let you know where we're at with that right now, the RSA does remain intact. Some of their staff took retirement, but there hasn't been a formal reduction in force among RSA, unlike what we've seen in many other departments and programs. We have been asked by CSAVR, our membership organization, about our opinions about whether or not if RSA were to move, if it would move, if we would prefer to see it move under the Federal Department of Labor or the Federal Department of Health and Human Services. Most states, including California, have gotten together and discussed it and determined that we think that the Department of Labor would be a better fit for RSA at this point, partially because they already have ODEP, the Office of Disability Employment Policy, where they do other work around employment for people with disabilities, but also because we're seeing a lot of cuts specifically to people with disabilities in Health and Human Services right now. Mm-hmm. And we feel like leaning into jobs, leaning into labor and being housed there will probably be better and make more sense long run for the program. Several of us, including myself and Sue, both had the opportunity last month to attend the CSAVR conference, which is the big national conference for VR in Washington, D.C. And the new acting commissioner for RSA, Chris Pope, spoke to us. He was generally positive about the future of VR and the future of RSA. He said that while the government efficiency folks are in the building and they're asking lots of questions about the work they do, that the overall indication was more from curiosity and wanting to learn more and seeing the value in the program. And really that goes to say just to one other thing that I'm really thinking about right now, which is really leaning in all of our conversations to talking about the value of the work that we do. Because we help people get jobs. We help people get off of benefits and become more independent in society. And I think that the more that we lean into that messaging, the more it will help the longevity of our program. Even though the RSA right now appears to be intact and moving forward, we haven't been quite as lucky with the programs that fall under the Federal Department of Health and Human Services. The Administration for Community Living, which provided the funding and oversight of the Independent Living Centers, our Traumatic Brain Injury Program, and our Assistive Technology Programs, that administration has been eliminated, and thousands of people at the Federal Health and Human Services Agency have been laid off. Other programs that also impact people with disabilities, including people with IDDD, many senior programs like Meals on Wheels, Adult Protective Services, caregiver supports. A lot of these things have been upended as a result of the elimination of the Administration for Community Living. As of right now, we have not seen any impacts to the funding of the three programs that we have that sit under there, but we're still watching as this reorganization takes place. Right now, the programs that sit under DOR that were housed in the Administration for Community Living have been moved to the Administration for Children and Families, and we've also heard that that's where special education will be moving. But really, we're watching this closely also because I see this as a bigger erosion of the administrative office that was started by the Obama administration to really strengthen and consolidate aging and disability programs and resources at a federal level. So this is something that we continue to monitor closely. We're also monitoring actions federally that are happening related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. You all may be aware that over the last year, we've established a new division at DOR specifically focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we have no plans to discontinue that work. That work will continue to go. We may just talk about what DEI is a little bit differently. Instead of being diversity, inclusion, and equity, we may call it disability, employment, and independence. But just because maybe we don't say the words that seem to be triggering people right now doesn't mean that we're not committed to making sure that people who come through our doors have culturally aware and competent services and continue to have those services. We know right now that there's a lot of attacks on people, on employees with disabilities federally, attacks on people with autism, and we're really leaning into the positivity of what we bring to our programs and bring to people, and are continuing really to do work as best we can on a day-to-day basis around all of these things that are happening with that commitment to continuing to serve people. I'd like to move on to a few updates that are happening at the state level. I know I only have a few minutes left here, but right now we are really deeply in the state budget process. Next week, we expect to see the release of the May revise of the governor's budget here at the state level. And we're also monitoring the continuing resolution for the federal budget, which is scheduled to be released on May 9th, which is a week from today. Although the May revise will give us a good idea about the budget, since it will be finalized before the continuing resolution comes out, it may change significantly depending on what's in the continuing resolution. But as of the January draft of the governor's budget, DOR had a solid framework for the coming year. However, if we see major shifts, our department might have to make major adjustments as well. We're also really preparing for a challenging budget for the next 2 years, given things that are going on federally, as well as the wildfires in Los Angeles a few months ago, both of which are taking a really large impact on the current state budget. So we're living in uncertainty for the foreseeable future, but the good news is the DOR is in a strong position to be able to weather this. We have been very successful in bringing in other sources of funding, including reallotment dollars from the VR program. And we haven't, as I mentioned in my federal updates, we haven't seen any indications as of yet that any of our grants will be cut. We also received just last week a significant cost of living adjustment to the VR grant. And we also are seeing in these leaked budget documents at the federal level a potential increase for independent living as well. So we'll be closely monitoring these things in the next few months because the budget will have a big impact on the work that we can do. Just a couple other things. At the department level, we've had, aside from having a change of director, we've had a number of other executive level vacancies. In my previous role, I was the deputy director of our Office of Legislation and Communication. So that job became vacant, and I'm very excited to announce that Dante Allen, who was the former commissioner for RSA under the Biden administration is returning to California and will be joining DOR this coming Monday as our new Deputy Director of Legislation and Communication. We also have someone who is going through the governor appointment process right now to be the Deputy Director of our Independent Living and Community Access Division. And we're still looking for a chief counsel. We also understand and know that many of you are concerned about our assistant deputy for our specialized services division, and we're still looking for the right person for that job as well. Just briefly, I want to touch on a couple other things that are going on right now. In the last month, we have had two big master plans at the federal level, not the federal level, at the state level that have been released. A master plan for developmental services and a master plan for career education. And both of these plans, DOR has been involved in putting together, were named in both of them, and have deliverables that we'll be working in tandem with partners throughout the state to implement. And so with that, those are the updates that I have at a department level. And at this point, I will turn it over to our Deputy Director of Specialized Services, Sue Pelbath, to go into more detail with things going on in her division. So take it away, Sue.
Thank you, Kim. Everybody can hear me okay? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Before I get started, first of all, thank you, Kim. I know I can speak for all of the staff at DOR. We couldn't be more pleased or proud to have you as our new director. If I could, I'd just do an applause with all the listeners because you deserve it. Before I get started with some of my team leaders and some words I'd like to say, is there going to be an opportunity to take questions during this general session?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So I think if you hold your questions until my team has also presented their updates for their sections, then we can go based on time, right? What's left over, how long we can answer questions.
Yes.
And we're happy to do that. As a matter of fact, those of you who know me, I do better with Q&A than I do with just talking to people. So anyhow, okay. For those of you who may not know, I'm Sue Pelbath. I am the Deputy Director for the California DOR over the Specialized Services Division. And four of the sections in my division provide the specialized services for the folks who are blind and or low vision. I myself was not born with a disability. I actually had perfect vision until I was 10 years old. And then I had low vision for many years. And then due to a combination of macular degeneration and retinitis pigmentosa, I became totally blind. So I was teaching in special ed during that time, my 40s, and I retired because, you know, obviously I didn't have any skills and abilities to continue that work. I also was not aware of the Department of Rehabilitation and the opportunities that were there for me to continue that work. So after retiring, had a couple years of many of you on this call, nationwide, statewide, can probably relate to that transition process that we all go through with acquired disabilities and the loss and all the psychosocial kind of emotional parts of that journey. So after a couple of years of really, really kind of sad, I ended up finding out about the Department of Rehabilitation. And this was back in 2006. So I went for services, I went back to school, and in 2014, I started my second career, third if you count raising a bunch of kids. So I started my third career with the department, and I started off in the field, in a field unit. I ended up being a counselor and then the program manager and administrator at the Orientation Center for the Blind prior to being appointed to this position. Almost 3 years now. So again, I'm so pleased to be back with you folks. I have four of my team leaders. They're all leaders within their own sections. Some are managers, some are the actual leaders of their programs. And so within Specialized Services Division, we have the immersion program on a campus in Albany, California. It's the Orientation Center for the Blind. Folks move in there for 3 years and 3 years, 3 months, and learn all those skills and abilities that we all know are necessary in order to live independently and to hopefully go back to work or to acquire employment for the first time. We also have the Business Enterprise Program. And many of you know what that program is. It's our blind vendors program in California, but it is a nationwide federal Randolph Shepherd program. Also, we have the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program with Jay Harris leading that grant program. And now, thanks to many of you on this call, and due to Assembly Bill 2480, we also serve in California folks who are under 55 who are just trying to acquire those skills and abilities to live independently. We also have our Blind Field Services Employment Section. I believe Yuki's here with us today. She's one of our team managers and our acting district administrator. And she will share with all of you the latest and greatest of getting folks employed who are blind or visually impaired. I know we're a little pressed for time, so I thought we'd start off with Jay Harris and let him give us some updates on OIB and YIB, younger folks who are blind. I forget what we actually call it now, YIB, I guess. Younger Individuals Who Are Blind, and OIB, Older Individuals Who Are Blind. He can let you know where we are. And we have some real exciting news about the coverage this year with our grants. So Jay, are you here with us?
I am.
All right.
Well, thank you, Sue, for the fantastic introduction, and Kim, it was great hearing your update as well. I am so pleased to be here and to talk a little bit today about our Older Individuals Who Are Blind and Younger Individuals Who Are Blind programs, or as Sue demonstrated, our fun acronyms that you may hear throughout our presentation. So please don't be afraid to ask us if we use an acronym you're not familiar with, because sometimes we use them and forget that they're not common knowledge. but OIB or YIB are the way we refer to the two programs. And our competitive process netted us 15 nonprofit organizations across the state of California who provide services to our older individuals who are blind population. And so the exciting news as of October 1st of 2023, for the first time in many years, we had statewide coverage of the for that population to receive services. So no matter what county you live in California, you had options. And the good part, I will say that we had two counties that went for quite a few years with no services available. The good part is I know I did receive calls from one of those counties during that year, and one of our organizations very generously agreed to see a person who lived in that county, because I will tell you, this group of organizations is a very, very dedicated, passionate group of folks who do their best to provide the high quality services to folks all across the state. So if you need to know more, feel free to reach out to me. I'm hoping there's a way we can make sure that our contact information is shared, but feel free to reach out. An easy one to remember might be our email address. It's OIBinfo, and then our standard Department of Rehabilitation end to our emails, which is at dor.ca.gov. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out, and myself or the analyst who works with me, Lori, will get back to you about getting in touch with a program in your area if you have any questions. But the way our programs work quickly is that anybody 55 or older who contacts one of our partner organizations will go through the intake process with that organization, and they will work with you to establish a plan for services and support you through the learning that you need. And they may even be able to purchase some assistive technology devices, or I remind people that AT doesn't always mean high tech, so it might be simple bump dots or a cutting guard or safety mitts for getting stuff out of the oven when they're teaching you how to cook, if you're interested in that. So our programs offer a really wide variety of independent living skills training, orientation and mobility training, assistive technology training and devices, information and referral. There's a whole wide variety of things that they can do to support you. Many of them also offer some additional programs and services that are unique to the particular organization, because many of them receive funding from other entities that allows them to expand the scope of what they're able to do or provide. And our program for those 55 and older is open to anybody who's 55 or older and has blindness or visual impairment, a condition that interferes with their activities of daily living. For the younger program, it's a little bit more complicated on the eligibility for the program, but anybody between 18 to 54, so if you're 18 years of age, all the way up to almost 55, you can be served under this program if you do not have a case open with Department of Rehabilitation and are not employed, and then the other same requirements as our older program. You must be blind or visually impaired and be able to benefit from the services. So that program's a little more restrictive because we already have a vocational rehabilitation, program, Blindfield Services, that can assist folks who are looking for employment. So this program is in many ways, people will remember back. We try not to bring up homemakers plans all the time, but this is in many ways a good way for folks who are not looking for an employment outcome to be able to get some instruction and assistance in learning new things as they adjust to living with blindness or visual impairment. So, and again, that program is available across the entirety of the state as well. The referrals are the same. So every program that has an OIB program, every organization that has an OIB program also has a YIB program. And they may call them something unique. The programs often name the programs at their organization, but if you call, you should be able to talk with them and see what their requirements are and set up an intake and so on. So I'll wrap it up there and look forward to any questions folks might have.
All right. Thank you, Jay.
Great. And we have lots to share, but we're all here. Contact us, like Jay said, and we'll continue to provide anybody with more information after this conference. Next up, we're going to have Kelly Snow. He is our program administrator over the Business Enterprise Program, and he'll be giving you a brief overview of what's happening there and kind of how our vendors are doing. So, Kelly, are you with us? I do not hear Kelly.
Uh-oh. I don't hear him. Do we see him, Natalie?
No, he's not on the attendee side, unless he's a phone number. Would he come in on a phone, do you think?
It's possible. And if he's hearing us.
Kelly, raise your hand.
We do have a phone number of 626.
No.
No.
And 680. Oh, okay. Yeah. Never mind. Sorry. Well, let me see. Hold on.
You just don't read that phone number out loud. Thank you. Okay. Well, you know,
for housekeeping purposes, this is Jay. I'm wondering if you may want to, if somebody knows what the command is to unmute on the phone, because that I know can be.
Well, I have to give them permission to, to do it, because it's a webinar. So,
yeah, he has to join on his panel link in case you're listening, Kelly. All right. We will move right along here and we will listen to Carrie Stamps. He is our program manager at the Orientation Center for the Blind, the campus I was talking about briefly earlier. And there is an administrator, Eric Mazaregos, who's off this weekend. So Carrie has a position I formerly had at OCB as well, and he's going to give us the latest and greatest from OCB. So,
thanks,
Carrie.
I appreciate
all
it.
All right, we hear thanks. You fine. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thanks. Yeah. And thanks to you, Kim, as well. So OCB, we've been here since about 1964, so it's been in the community a long time. We're in Albany, California. And we're currently a three-month cohort program. So we have four cohorts per year. So you said 3 years by accident. I think it feels like 3 years to some of our students. But, you know, they learn a lot in a very short period of time. It's a pre-vocational program under DOR. So we're the only property owned and operated by the Department of Rehabilitation. So the DOR counselors in the field, they refer their consumers here for pre-vocational skills training. And we train across five different domains. So we teach computers and assistive technology. So students are learning how to sharpen their computer and typing skills, learning JAWS, Zoom Text, Fusion, things like that. They learn Braille. So we have some advanced Braille users come in, and we have people who've never touched a Braille cell in their lives. We also teach orientation and mobility, which is, of course, very important for pre-vocational work in school, daily living skills and cooking as well. So non-visual techniques and learning how to, you know, keep a space clean like an apartment or a kitchen, and safe techniques for cooking like cutting, measuring, being around a stove. We have you have to be 18 years old at least to get into our program, and we have anyone from 18 years old. I think in our current cohort, we have our oldest members 83, and we have everything in between. So we get consumers from all across California, from different socioeconomic, cultural backgrounds. So we have quite a mix of people coming in every 3 months. Sometimes we can extend the program for people who may be a little more new to their blindness. So maybe they need a little more skills training. If we have room available in our cohort, we can possibly extend, but this is on a case-by-case basis. Typically, we have 15 to 16 students each cohort. They have their own dorm room, single occupancy. It used to be a longer program, so OCB used to be a nine-month program, and we would have two students share a dorm room. So we've kind of dialed it back, but the students get a lot more training in a shorter period of time. So they get computers every day, 5 days a week. They get Braille 5 days a week. They get O&M 5 days a week, and then cooking and DLS, you know, depending on what they need, they will get that a few days a week. And classes are about 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day, 5 days a week. So I would say it's kind of analogous to taking a really full course load at community college. So after students leave here at OCB, they work on their individualized goals or their IP, their plan for employment. So we have a community resource navigator here that we hired 6 months ago, and she works with them on an individualized basis to not only make sure they're making good progress through OCB, but that, you know, they have a plan for after OCB. For some people, this might be mean going to community college for the first time, or it might be an older individual who can't do the kind of work they used to do before, and now they have to reinvent themselves. So she helps to guide them through that process. That was my former job as the rehabilitation counselor, and then I became the assistant administrator in the past year. In addition to all that, we offer, you know, some assessments. So we have an O&M mobility boot camp. So maybe somebody just needs to update their orientation and mobility skills so they can come to OCB for a period of 2 weeks, stay in the dorms, and they can just work on mobility and nothing else. So maybe that's somebody who's going to go to school, return to school, return to work, and they really need to get those public transportation and those white cane skills down. So they come here for a period of 2 weeks. We try to build a little fun in as well. So we do some field trips with the students. We'll take them over to Muir Woods or down to the Berkeley Marina. There's also a blind sailing program for the San Francisco Bay. So we have a partnership with them where they come and pick up students here at OCB, and they'll take them out to the Berkeley Marina and teach them how to sail, which has been pretty fun for them. We also partner with a organization called Kid Power, and they provide self-defense training. We do a once a year, we'll do like an in-person self-defense training. But they also do training around workplace etiquette, how to stay safe out in public, what to do if somebody's confronting you out on the street. So every cohort, there's at least one or two of those meetings online so that those students can benefit from that training. Regarding the BEP program, we will do an assessment for BEP as well. So if somebody is considering the BEP program, the counselor is not quite sure of their current skill set, they'll send them here to OCB for a week and we'll assess where they're at. We don't really provide training during that time, but we just kind of assess where they're at in their computer skills, with their braille skills, their organizational skills, and then we provide a report to those counselors in the field. If a counselor isn't quite sure that a consumer is ready to come to OCB at all, they can also send them to us for a week, and we can kind of assess and see, okay, is this person ready for an intensive training program, which it is. You know, for 3 months, you're here, you're in classes every day, and, you know, maybe somebody is really new to their visual impairment, so maybe they're not quite ready, but the counselor wants to kind of get an assessment of where they're at, so we also do that for the counselors. Lastly, I would like to mention that we partnered this year with an organization called Hearts for Sight, which provides actual therapy services for our student population. And this has been enormously beneficial because coming to OCB, you know, you're meeting large groups of new people. You're in an intensive, you know, classroom environment. You're having to navigate socially. Maybe you haven't had to do that for a while. And so you might need some counseling, especially in those first couple of weeks. So I'm able to refer, and our community resource navigator is able to refer those students for counseling. So they get 8 sessions while they're here at OCB to help them adjust to their visual impairment. And at times we've been able to extend that as well. So I think that's about all I have right now. So Sue, I think I'll give it back to you, and thank you all for coming, and thank you for hosting.
And if I could say, that's amazing. I am glad the counseling has been added to programs.
Yeah,
and I saw Kelly Snow enter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I saw Kelly Snow enter. By the way,
he did. I heard that announcement as well. Thank you so much, Carrie. That was really great overview. So much is happening at OCB, and to put it in such a short period of time, but it's really exciting. We've been able to really get innovative there and bring on some special programs that are applicable to living and working safely, you know, in our communities, as that is different from the way it used to be at OCB, right? Also, the 3-month cohort, the group of people is smaller. It used to be 35 people. We're down to 15, 16 for 3 months, and all of them get class mobility every day, braille every day, computers every day, and we mimic the work day. So it's a 40-hour work week, but it's training. So I always told the students, you know, this is your job right now, and your paycheck is the training. And you know, and it's really fun. And you know, so we all know, many of us on this call know that you know, maybe we don't, the first try we don't get through it, or we're just not quite there with the emotional part. And some of you know my story. I had 2 years of that kind of counseling thing going on before I went back for services. So, Carrie, it's awesome. I love what we're doing there. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Sue.
All right. I heard that Kelly Snow is with us. He is our administrator, as I mentioned, over the BEP program. That's kind of redundant, the Business Enterprise program. So, Kelly, can you unmute and join us?
Hello, yes. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can. Great. Hey, Kelly, it's all yours. Brief overview. All right.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Glad to be here. Most of you may know, the BEP program has sort of been on a bit of a hiatus for several years since COVID, and we're just now sort of getting back into things, getting our training geared back up. We hired a new trainer, and he's going through the, he just went through OCB, went through a week of training there. And he's continuing to do training to get geared up to start his first class. We're not quite sure when that will be, but we think it will be probably sometime in late summer, early fall. And we're happy to get that going once again. We provide food services, of course, to people who are in federal and state buildings. And our vendors have to be visually impaired, be legally blind in order to become a licensed blind vendor, and a client of the Department of Rehabilitation, and they need to be able to be appropriate for self-employment, because that's what this is. It's really a self-employment plan. And we send them through what is probably going to be 4 to 6 months of training, and that is varied over the years from as many as 8 months to 3 months of training. But I think we're going to look at a 4 to 6 month training program. And, you know, we really depend on the counselors to be able to determine, do all the stuff that they do to make sure that they're qualified to be a BEP vendor, and send them through our prerequisite training program, a 20-day eval with one of our vendors, for example. That's part of it. Of the prerequisites to get into the training program. And currently we have 51 primary locations with about as many as, I think we're up to about 250 satellite sites, when you include the primaries and the satellites and the interim locations that we have in the federal and state buildings, roadside rests, vending machine operations at roadside rests, prisons, United States post offices, and even the Department of Defense. We have large military contracts throughout California. We have 7 of those, where they're providing dining services to our troops. So, one of the prerequisites, I don't know if that was hit on with the OCB presentation, but our vendors go through the OCB program as well to make sure that they have the independent living skills to, you know, to be able to participate in such a program, where they have to do, you know, come to class every day, get to their locations where they're going to do their on-the-job training and that sort of thing. Once they go through that whole training process, they become a licensed vendor. They get a license, and then they are eligible to apply for those locations that we solicit, and they can apply for those. And if they get one of the locations, then their first inventory is sponsored by the Department of Rehab. They pay for all of that. After that's been expired, they have to buy their own inventory, and their workers' comp and liability is also paid for the first 6 months, and after that they're on their own, and they get business consulting services from our business consultants, and so that's always, of course, available to them. We have an office in Los Angeles and Sacramento. We have 4 BECs, Business Enterprise Consultants, in Los Angeles, and 3 up here in the north in Sacramento. And they service all the way from, you know, from Sacramento all the way down to the border down south. So we cover a wide area. that sort of sums up the BEP. I don't know if anyone has questions, but.
Yep. Thank you, Kelly. We're going to take questions after we hear from our last presenter from my division. And then we'll all, depending on the question, if it's for BEP, you'll take that one. Okay. Thank you so much. The BEP is so complex, and so there's so much to it, and many of you do know the program, but for Kelly to be able to summarize it in a couple minutes is kind of a miracle, because it is a lot, and we are statewide, and we're busy. My team, to keep that program going and to support those vendors, work a lot. I mean, we're all on it. We were wondering how many of us support the team, and it's quite a few people. Probably around 30 folks between us and the department supports. So, and it's always unique experience, I'll tell you. It's interesting, and we welcome new consumers. So if any of you out there know of someone or are interested yourself, you can get them, have them get in touch with their counselor or Kelly, and we'll take it from there. So thanks so much. Now we have Yuki Long. She is our acting district administrator for Blindfield Services right now. And Yuki's with us to talk about some of the data and share with you some numbers regarding our consumers who are in employment plans. So Yuki, you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. It's all yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Good afternoon, everybody. And I apologize. I have a cough drop because I have a really bad sore throat. So I have a cough drop in my mouth. So I apologize. My name is Yuki Long, and I am the TM for the Inland Empire. And currently I am acting DA for this month. And just a quick background about myself. I've been with Blindfield Services for 15 years, and I've been the manager for the Inland Empire District for about 9 years. Prior to that, I was a school counselor for at-risk youth. But I am glad to be here. I love BFS. And I just want to say that Carrie and, oh my God, I'm so sorry, Carrie, Eric, and Jay. Their programs are amazing resources, and they really greatly help our consumers. So I just want to say thank you for that. And also BEP is an amazing resource and program as well. So I am here just to give some data and updates in regards to what our the BFS is doing. First of all, our staff and our managers are working very hard to provide services and resources to consumers who are blind and low vision. And, you know, they're doing everything they can and working relentlessly to provide employment services and to get people employed into the competitive integrated employment. So that being said, I'm going to provide some data from January 1st through March 31st. The data was gathered from AWARE and the DOR dashboard. So BFS statistics for state fiscal year to date, 24-25 for the third quarter. The total applications as of March 31st was 352. The applications as of the same date in last year was 331, so we are higher this year. And applications as of the date in 2023 was 284. So that's a huge jump. So that's really great. Services to students with disabilities. Now, again, the term students with disabilities in general is anybody with a disability in a secondary, post-secondary, or other recognized education program who is 16 to 21. The students with disability applications, total numbers as of March 31st is 40, or 36% of the total numbers of applications. Students with disabilities as of the same date last year was 44, or 13.29% of the total applications. Total number of individuals served this quarter is 4,283. The wage data. So this information covers January 1st through March 31st, 2025. BFS has the highest hourly wage at $29.65 per hour. The state average is $23.48 per hour. I can't do math very well, so I can't tell you what that whole difference is. So I apologize for that. I hope you guys all have your calculators out for that one. The median wage, the median hourly wage for BFS was $23.04. The statewide median hourly wage was $20. So that one is a $3.04 difference. I could do that math. That one was just super easy. The average hours worked per week for BFS was 33 hours. The statewide average per week was also 33. The median hours worked per week for BFS was 40, and the statewide median hours was also 40. So the total successful closures as of March 31st, meaning these people were employed, they're doing well, we were able to close them successfully, was 91. The successful closures as of the same date last year, of March 31st, 2024, was 86. So we are higher this year. And again, the year's not over yet, so we're hoping to capture a lot more employed consumers. Successful closure information. So placements earning $25 per hour or more. I'll give you guys the top five that we have. So we had an environmental scientist and specialist, including health. They were $76.92 per hour, 40 hours per week. I'm really jealous because I would like that as well. Lawyer, $75 per hour, 40 hours per week. Human resources, training and labor relations specialist was $71.88 per hour at 40 hours per week. Technical writer, we had $64.90 per hour, 40 hours per week. And computer programmer was at $62.50 per hour at 40 hours per week. So those were some of our highest grossing salaries for this year. And because of time, I won't go through. We have a lot more that were over the $25 an hour. I won't go over that right now due to the time. But again, if you guys want that information, you can ask Sue.
All right. So thank you guys. Ask you.
Sure. Okay. And thank you guys again for allowing me to be here to present.
Thank you.
Back to you, Sue.
All right. Thanks so much. So I think we have about 15 minutes left, and we're all here to answer anything. Kim's still with us as well. So I think we welcome questions. If we can't get to the answer, we'll get back to you. So, Regina, are you going to take the lead on the question Q&A?
Natalie will recognize okay. hands.
All right. And we all also right. have some questions by email.
Okay, we'll take a couple hands and then do a couple by email, Steve.
All right, so we're going to have Mitch, who is going to be followed by Margie.
Good afternoon. This is Mitch Pomerantz, and I have two questions.
Hi, Mitch.
The first one is that I read a couple of weeks ago something that led me to believe that there is a effort now to have some of our BFS counselors now begin to take generalist cases as well. If that is the case, that is in direct violation of SB 105, something that I was intimately involved with 20-plus years ago. And so my first question is that in the works? And if so, you really need to look at that legislation.
I'm going to take a short nap, you know.
Oh, Rob. You're not muted, Rob.
Oh, okay. Is that
Mark?
That's...
Hello?
Okay. Hey, Mitch. I heard you. This is Sue Palbeth.
That's my first question. Do you want my second question?
Sure.
Sue, all right. My second question is that our CCB president just resigned within the last week.
I'm muted.
Take a position within the Department of Rehab. And
I'm sorry, Mitch. I really hate to interrupt you. Natalie, can you get that?
Yeah, I'm trying to find them.
Rob second. Turner.
All right. Can I continue?
One moment. If you talk, it kind of jumps the screen.
Let's see. 1 second, guys. Sorry.
It's embarrassing. I don't know why it keeps on unmute.
I got it. Sorry. Go ahead,
Mitch. All right, Mitch. Go ahead.
All right, Mitch.
We good to go. And so our president, Sarah Harris, resigned within the last week or two to take a position with the Department of Rehab. It appeared as if she was required to do so in order to take the position with the department. We have had in the past CCB leaders, elected and otherwise, who held very high positions in the department. And if, in fact, Sarah was required to resign her presidency, that is probably in violation of state law. So I hope the answer to both questions is no, but those were my questions, and I'd like responses, please.
Okay, so the second one, I believe that was Sarah's choice. She's taken on a huge position with the department. By the way, this is Sue again, for all of you who don't know. And she and I have communicated frequently. This is a big, huge undertaking and a huge career change for her. And I think she, and I don't want to speak any more for her than that, but definitely her choice. Okay. As for the first question, now, our blind field services staff are assisting the VRED caseloads, but by no means have we limited them or have denied any services for the blind consumers who come in. As a matter of fact, that's a priority. Some of the caseloads within BFS have been really low, and instead of making that workforce, if you will, that is the specialized services, you know, for blind folks, smaller and moving QRPs over to the VRED side, we took a hard look at the numbers, and some of our counselors out there are supporting their local VR teams. So we aren't, nothing's changed to the specialized services piece, and the counselors who work for BFS are the specialists for blind field services. Does that answer the question? I hope so.
Well, okay. I'll just say very quickly, Sue, that I think it's still in violation of SB 105, and I would urge you and others in the department to take a really close look at that, because it's sort of the beginning of the slippery slope. So that's all I'll say, and open it up, and other folks can respond.
All right, appreciate that.
Okay. We're going to move on to Margie.
Thank you, and hello, Team Rehab! Yay!
Hey Margie.
My question is actually for Kim. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
Just this week, within the last year, I got my fourth referral, and these are various sources of, of continued employment cases, people who are new to blindness. And in all of these cases, they have been so badly mismanaged by the counselor. I'm involved in two of the cases, about to be involved in three of them. And once I got involved, things turned around. I don't want to get into a lot of details. I suspect this is a problem system-wide, but I'm going to give you one example. I have a brand new employment case, job retention, that's the word, sorry, with my brain injury, I forget words, job retention. The goal, the very first goal in the rehab plan is resume writing. And that does not
you
fit.
You and others in the department take a really close look at that, because So that's all
Mitch,
I'll say, and open
Mitch,
up and other
you're
folks
unmuted.
Can respond.
All right. Appreciate that.
Okay. We're going to move on to Margie.
Okay.
Thank you.
And hello, Team Rehab. Yay.
Someone's unmuted. I'm so sorry.
Hey, my question is actually for Kim. Hello, Kim.
Why am I recording? The recording's coming through on here.
That's right.
Let's be quiet for a minute.
Within the last year, I got my fourth referral.
Oh, perhaps
and these are
the
various sources. Our streamer. Excuse me. Of continued employment cases, people who are new to blindness.
That's not me talking.
And
no,
these cases, they have been so badly mismanaged by the counselor.
Is someone getting that
right? Yes, I'm looking
for
them.
Three of them. And once I got involved, things turned around. I don't want to get into a lot of details. I suspect this is a problem system-wide, but I'm going to give you one example.
It's not showing me who it is.
It sounds like the streamer.
Sorry, with my brain injury, I forget words. Job retention.
Can someone get a hold of this?
The very first goal in the rehab plan is resume.
There we go. All right.
Thank you. Okay, I'm so sorry. I apologize. And
not a problem.
Was the question clear or were you done, Margie?
I'm just going to add to the end. Thank you, Regina. I suspect there's many, many more of these cases. And I don't want to prioritize, but I am. I think the highest priority is to keep a newly blind person, someone new to sight loss, on their job. And to me, the very first thing would be an on-the-job assessment once a plan is signed. So, Kim, I would like you to address it. Sue and I've had some conversations, and I'm going to shut up and let you cover that, please.
Thank you. Yeah, if possible, keep the question short as you can. Okay, go ahead, Kim.
All right. Happy to take that. And thank you for the question, Margie. I really think that this kind of goes back to what I was talking about during my presentation, that we're seeing across the board with people who are entering VR, whether it's through blind field services or through the general program, that we're not doing as good of a job serving individuals as we can, which is why we're looking at our caseload sizes, why we're looking at the structure of the department, why we're looking at a number of these different things to make sure that we're serving people better. And, you know, either, like you said, you know, if someone loses their sight, keeping them in a job or getting somebody, you know, whatever they need when they get to us, you know, as quickly and effectively as possible. And I recognize that that is not fully happening right now. And that's why we're revisiting all of these things. And I know that that's kind of a vague answer right now, but just to remind you all, I've only been in the job 3 months. I'm still, you know, every day kind of uncovering where new problems and issues are, and we'll continue to do so. But we understand, and I'm very aware that, you know, a lot of people who are entering into program and into plan are not getting necessarily what they need as quickly and effectively as they need it. That's part of what we're going to be working on.
Okay. Are we out of time?
No, we have a few more minutes, okay. But we do want to get to the people on email.
Did you have anything you wanted to add, Sue?
I was just going to say, at this moment, I had Yuki and her team pull some data. We're around 180 job retention cases right now in BFS, and we appreciate hearing if there are issues. So continue to let us know, Margie, and Margie and I have spoken about a couple of these. So thanks.
As soon as I have the release, I will let you know about these clients. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Sue. All right, Steve.
Yeah, we have a question emailed in from Bob Acosta, who says, congratulations on your appointment as the director of the Department of Rehabilitation. In November of 2024, we learned that your blind clients were to be shifted to generalist counselors. Traditionally, it has been the belief of the organized blind that the best counselors for our blind are blind persons who have lived their lives as blind persons. Can you please explain the logic behind this decision?
I'll take it, Kim. You want me to? I'm sorry, but you have you're misinformed. That information is incorrect. All of our blind consumers have specialized counselors in blind field services. Once in a while, we'll have someone who is deafblind, and it's determined how we serve those folks best. Sometimes the teams get together. But as far as us sending our blind consumers to the regular VRED, the Voc Rehab Employment Division, that is incorrect, not true. Appreciate the question.
Thank you. And do we have another one from email?
That's the only one from email so far.
Okay, we can take one more raised hand, Natalie.
Okay, Mary Lou. You should be able to talk. You are still muted. I have asked you to unmute. All right, you have one more. Edward, let me... One moment, let me. All right, Edward,
our
you
blind,
can.
Our blind persons who have lived.
Oh, they're both
as, blind persons.
Okay, I think that might be the bathroom
logic
noise.
Behind this decision.
Ed, if you can ask a question, you'll have to go to another room.
You have, you're misinformed. That not information is incorrect. All of our
it's someone's stream. Mary Lou. It's Mary Lou.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Once in a while, we'll have someone who is
Mary Lou. Too much background noise.
It's the team together. But as far as.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So
there you go.
If I'm you're, here. I'm if, here. I don't hear it now.
Right. Okay. So if you're talking, to be clear, you have to have your radio or other device turned down or else it
is. Realize that.
Okay.
Go ahead. Streamer was doing that. Anyhow, this is Ed Crest and Sue.
I am.
Hired after 32 years. And I have three concerns. Recently, maybe about a month and a half ago or a month, I heard that the business enterprise program in another state, I think it was a southern state, was going to pass a state law to introduce other disabilities or other persons interested in BEP wanting to be in that program. And the Randolph-Shepard Act basically is for people who are blind. And I want to make sure Department of Rehab make sure that's still intact and they don't change that.
It is intact. I'll just take that one first. It is intact in California. I had not heard that. And I was just at NCSAB and none of the states shared those changes. And I'm not even sure that a state law, whether it's Senate bill or assembly bill, could supersede a federal law, the Randolph-Shepard. But in California, we are completely intact and following the same regulations, policies that we always have.
Good, because there's private industries that want to take into BEP, like at the VA hospital in Loma Linda, should be a BEP location. Patton State Hospital should be a BEP location. And what's Canteen is getting in there and taking over these locations. So again, rehab needs to really make sure that BEP is protected. And my last question is, we, as a counselor, I had about two, maybe three BEP counselors reapplying to the Department of Rehab because BEP wasn't supporting purchasing equipment, whether it's a computer equipment or other equipment. And that really needs to be turned into BEP for BEP to provide those services and provide that equipment rather than having the person apply to Department of Rehab as a new consumer. That's my concerns.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, too. And I can just say to all of you that there are regulations on how we can spend the money and the VR dollars and also the match dollars with purchases for the BEP program come from the vendor's profits. So often we will recommend that somebody go to the field and get a counselor. And again, like Margie brought up, those will be job retention cases to support someone being able to stay in business and stay employed. So,
however, in the cases that I had, it was the funding was passed back and forth. They said, well, BEP should pay for that. No DOR should pay for that. The vendor finally just gave up in one situation and said, forget it. I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
So it's kind of sad.
Yeah. In the future, if anyone knows that, reach out to Kelly or I, and we'll look into it a little more. But I appreciate all this. We're going to, take what you've all shared with us today and take a look. And then, of course, if you know something specific, we're happy to take that on as well.
Okay, and thank you. I really hate to cut the question and answer off, but we will have to. I want to thank Kim, Sue, Jay, Carrie, Kelly, and Yuki. It's been a wonderful presentation, and thank you for being here. A very thorough presentation. And Jeff Tom, if he's here and can raise his hand, he had something to read as well. Is Jeff here?
This is Yuki. His hand is raised.
Okay.
Jeff Tom's hand is raised.
Can you send him to unmute, Natalie?
Yeah, he can unmute. He can unmute. He's on the panelist side, so okay. He should be
unmute
able to.
Unmute yourself, Jeff.
Steve, do you have resolution number one recorded there that you can play real quickly?
I'm sorry, Jeff. None of them have been recorded yet.
Do you have it on your Braille device that you can?
Yes, I could. If you can give me just a moment, I'm sorry. Let's ready okay. for that. But let me grab that resolution number one.
Mm-hmm.
Just a moment.
Does this pertain to the DOR teams, or should my
yes, yes, it is.
Okay. It is, thank and you. That's why we're reading it.
Okay,
thank you, President.
And in fact, it has to do with the question that Mitch raised. Yeah.
And I do want to thank you for tolerating our technical difficulties. It's always hard to predict what's going to happen when you're on Zoom.
Well, we all go through it, and we all empathize for you all. I heard you all stressing. We've all been there, I'm sure.
Okay, no, I've got the resolution, Jeff. Number one.
Right ahead.
Okay, upholding blind services and competitive employment at the California Department of Rehabilitation. Whereas SB 105 was implemented in 2003 to establish a specialized services division at the Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, with this division to include programs that serve people who are blind or have low vision, and whereas the intent underlying SB 105 was to improve upon competitive employment outcomes for people who are blind or have low vision, and whereas SB 105 states the department needs to implement policy and procedural changes in order to improve its ability to increase the numbers of blind and visually impaired consumers placed in competitive employment. And whereas on November 14th, 2024, it was stated at a meeting of the Blind Advisory Committee, BAC, that the data for annual competitive employment outcomes for DOR consumers who are blind has essentially remained the same over time, from 300 to 400 per year. And whereas competitive employment outcomes at the DOR are negatively affected by a myriad of related challenges, including but not limited to all of the following: the database is not readily accessible and is tedious for blind and low vision users. The current procurement process is ineffective and cumbersome, which prevents consumers from receiving their technology to go to school and work in a timely manner. The current system is inadequately staffed to directly serve consumers who are blind, have low vision, or deafblind. It takes twice as long to serve a consumer who is blind, low vision, or deafblind as compared to the vast majority of consumers on a generalist caseload, as verified by vocational counselors who have served both caseloads. And whereas at the November 14th meeting, it was announced that generalist cases are being merged with the blind caseload, a decision that will further adversely impact the department's ability to improve competitive employment outcomes for DOR consumers who are blind or have low vision. Therefore, be it resolved by the California Council of the Blind and convention assembled virtually, that this organization calls upon the DOR to uphold the letter and the spirit of the law by resolving and addressing the myriad issues that hinder increasing competitive employment outcomes for people who are blind or have low vision, including removing generalist cases from the caseloads of vocational counselors for the blind, and be it further resolved that the DOR develop in an expeditious manner a plan to address the concerns set forth in this resolution and provide a copy of this plan to the organization, And be it further resolved that this resolution be sent to the Director of the Department of Rehabilitation, as well as to the Governor's Office for purposes of oversight. And the resolution.
So as you can see, Kim, and the resolution will be formally voted on Sunday, but as you can see, we are very concerned with the need to increase positive outcomes for blind clients, and we certainly aren't going to increase them by doing things such as enlarging our already busy BFS counselor caseloads. So we would urge you to reconsider that step that has been taken. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff and Steve.
Thank you. And a copy of that will be sent. This is Kim. I'm sorry. Thank you, Jeff. A copy of that will be sent to me and Sue, correct?
Correct. Once it's voted upon.
Okay.
And passed. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking out time from your busy afternoon.
All right. Our pleasure. Thanks so much for having all of us. Take care, everybody.
All right.